Well, gang, before we get started with this episode of Hittin' Season, just a quick note. As you're listening to this podcast, you'll hear myself, Justin, and Liz as we are watching the Phillies take on the Mets. And as we were recording this, the Phillies were losing to the Mets 2-0. Jacob DeGrom was pitching for a short period of time. And when we signed off, it was the top of the eighth inning. Little did we know what would happen thereafter. We would have stayed on the air if we'd known what was going to happen was going to happen. The Phillies, of course, scoring 5 runs in the bottom of the eighth inning off of the Mets bullpen after Jacob DeGrom was ridiculously pulled at 77 pitches after 6 innings, and the Mets bullpen blew another lead, and the Phillies moved to 4-0 on the season after a 5-3 win over the New York Mets for only the 4th time in franchise history. They've started off 4-0. It also happened in 2019, 1915, and 1897. So, again, this doesn't happen all that often to the Philadelphia Phillies. They start off 4-0, and once again, a Gabe Jacob DeGrom starts. He doesn't win. Bob Brookhover with this incredible number. Since 2018, the Mets are 36-41 in Jacob DeGrom starts. They have a losing record in Jacob DeGrom starts. He has a 2.07 ERA since 2018, and they are 36-41 in his starts over that time. That's an impossible statistic, but one the Phillies were all but too happy to have work in their favor here on Monday night. So, again, the Phillies pull off a dramatic win over the New York Mets with 5 runs in the bottom of the eighth inning. Some great at-bats by Bryce Harper. By Reese Hoskins. Bryce Harper gets hit by a pitch. JT Realmuto with a huge game-tying base hit through the left side of the infield. And then Alec Boehm with a fielder's choice to third base on a ball that was thrown away by the third baseman. 2 runners score. Jose Alvarado made it a little interesting, although, really, he struck out the first two guys throwing 102 miles an hour. The Mets got 3 straight hits with 2 outs. Only a couple of them were hard hit. They found some holes. Alvarado pitched really well, even though he gave up his first run of the season. And the bullpen gives up their first run of the season. Great job by Sam Coonrod and Connor Brogdon in this game. And Jose Alvarado actually pitched really well in the ninth inning, even though it did get interesting with Pete Alonso hitting what would have been the go-ahead 3-run home run to the warning track. But I guess those deadened baseballs are having an effect. So as you're listening to this episode of Hittin' Season, we didn't know any of that was going to happen. But sit back and enjoy our thoughts on the first few games of the Philly season and just bask in the 4-0 Philadelphia Phillies early season success. Again, only the 4th time in franchise history it's happened.
It's gone! Put this one in the red column for the Fighting Bills!
Base hit! Down the left field line! Greg scores!
Ruiz slides! Rollins has won it! They stream out of the dugout! Yeah. Rollins by near third! This game is over!
Second deck walk-off home run! Grand slam, Bryce Harper!
That's what I call hitting season.
Now batting for the Phillies, John Stolness.
Hey there, podcast pals, and welcome to another edition of Hittin' Season. This is episode number 463. I'm John Stolness from The Good Fight. You can follow me on Twitter at John Stolness. Coming up, we're going to talk about the Phillies opening series against the Atlanta Braves and the series against the New York Mets that they are playing as we are recording this right now. The Phillies taking on the Metropolitans, and they are in the top of the fifth inning, trailing 2-0. It's not been a great game for Phil starter Matt Moore, but Philly starters had a terrific series against the Atlanta Braves, and if you caught the first episode of Up and In that we had this year, you heard a lot of great stats about the Phillies' rotation and pitching staff and what they did against a great Atlanta starting lineup. So if you haven't caught that, make sure you do. But we're going to talk about that opening series, and we're going to talk about the Mets series and some other stuff going around Major League Baseball. And joining me right now is my good friend Liz Rocher from Yahoo Sports. You follow her on Twitter at Liz Rocher. Liz, how are you?
I'm doing great. There's baseball. It's cool.
It is cool. It's what all the cool kids
are
doing.
It is really cool.
It's what the cool kids are doing, and this is our first get-together since the start of the season. When we spoke last week, we did our big MLB preview, and so the Phillies have played 3 full games since we spoke, and they're in the midst of their 4th game. We're hoping to be joined by our other co-host, Justin Clue, when he arrives, and when he does arrive on the scene, he's just going to pop right on in there if he's able to join us. And so, if so, we'll hear from Justin. If not, you will miss him. But we're going to just plow ahead and get started with the show here, and you know, I think with that opening series against the Atlanta Braves, obviously Phil's fans are feeling really good, especially about the pitching staff, Liz, because, you know, when you have three really good starters at the top of your rotation, it covers a lot of problems. And when the bullpen, when you only have to use your four best relievers, it covers a lot of problems. And it was a really good template for how this team can be successful this year. Get great pitching from their top three guys, Aaron Nola, Zach Wheeler, and Zach Eflin, and not have to overutilize your bullpen. Use your premium bullpen guys, which is what they did. What to you was more impressive during the first three games of the season, the way the starters pitched or the way the bullpen pitched?
I got to say the starters. Mm-hmm. I'm going to say the starters. The bullpen is great, but we also didn't have to the Phillies. I say we. I hate doing that. the Phillies also didn't have to depend on them too much. Like, when they were there, they did what they were supposed to do. Mm-hmm. Tonight, with Matt Moore coming out in the fourth inning, we're going to see really what they're made of. Mm-hmm. So it's hard for me to say that I was more impressed with the bullpen because they did what a bullpen is supposed to do.
Yeah. Yeah, no, they're supposed
to
hold leads.
The starters were wonderful.
Yeah.
Watching competent, brilliant, you know, more than competent, brilliant pitching was so wonderful. And, I mean, not surprising, but I guess comforting.
You know, I think the stat that I saw that really blew my mind was last year in the 60-game season, the Phillies only won one game in which the game was tied when the starter left it. And they've already won two games this year when a starter left the game and the game was tied. I mean, think about that last year. Like, if a starter left the game and it was tied, they weren't winning that baseball game. And so that's already been an important difference. I agree with you. I think the way the starters pitched really sets everything up. You're right. It's when you don't have to use the sixth and seventh and eighth guys in the bullpen, when you don't have to go to Vince Velasquez, when you don't have to go to David Hale, and you're using Jose Alvarado, who's throwing 100-mile-an-hour sinkers, and you're using Archie Bradley and Hector Neris, who has, you know, is the closer and has pitched pretty well, and Connor Brogdon a little bit here and there. You know, it's that's how you want your pitching staff to work. That's how you dream of it, you know, in spring training. But what's really going to make the difference for this team this year is how the number four and number five starters do, I think. You know, I mean, it's Matt Moore and Chase Anderson. They went out and they got these guys during the course of the offseason to provide some stability in the back of the rotation. And, you know, Matt Moore tonight at least got off to somewhat of a strong start, but then couldn't find the plate and was struggling for much of the night. So they're going to need Moore to actually pitch pretty well this year in order for this team to do anything.
Yeah, it's it's those two. Mm-hmm. And I'll admit, I don't feel like you can really ever truly tell anything about about these guys you bring in, you know, for your fourth and fifth starters. I don't ever feel like you can really get to know them well enough in spring training because no one's trying their hardest. It's not real in any way. Right. And so now, you know, and I'm not going to judge Matt Moore on one start. It could, you know, it's just one start. He'll be able to, you know, he'll have another start and another start, and I'll be able to evaluate him then. But tonight was not a great start, let's say. Not a super wonderful start, but to be fair, it's not like he gave up five, six, seven runs. He gave up two.
He gave up two runs. And Justin Clue is joining us. Justin, we're talking about the opening series against the Braves and how well the starters did, how well the bullpen did, and we were getting a little bit into Matt Moore there. I want to get your thoughts on Matt Moore in just a second. But obviously the opening weekend, the opening series, first of all, how are you, buddy?
You know, I was at the game until Brendan Nimmo worked a walk, and I thought he was chasing me, so I ran out of the stadium. Sorry, I was late.
Oh, good. Yeah, I knew there was a reason. That's a good one. So anyway, about with the opening series, the starters pitched great. I mean, obviously, Nola, Wheeler, and Eflin all pitched great, and the bullpen came through. Didn't give up a run the entire series. What was more impressive to you, the performance of the starters or the performance of the bullpen?
I think definitely the bullpen, just by comparison. I mean, in truth, the seeing the starting rotation like go all a hair shy of lucky number sevens across the board as far as innings pitched goes was tantalizing and extremely impressive. And I can't say enough about Zach Eflin coming out in game three and looking like he was exactly who he was hoped to be this season. But I mean, I feel like it's a toss up, but I say bullpen because of the contrast, obviously, against where that's coming from. I mean, it didn't just allow, we've kept saying, oh, it just has to be average and it's fine, but they were better than average. And I think that's why it stood out a little more, is that it was, a time will come where I'm sure comparisons will be made, but I think seeing them come out what do they allow? No runs over 7 1/3. Like that's just not what we're accustomed to around here. So I'm in bullpen shock. I gotta still say bullpen.
Yeah, when I asked Liz that question, she said starters, and I think I was leaning towards the starters as well. But it is a coin flip. I mean, it was such a dominating pitching performance against a really good lineup. And you know, as we were talking about, you know, the first three guys in the rotation, Nola, Wheeler, and Eflin, they're going to be really, really important this year. I mean, if you have three really good starting pitchers who are all pitching at or near a number one starter level, you're going to win a lot of baseball games. But I think what's really going to truly make this a special season, if they are going to go to the playoffs, is getting something out of your number four and number five guys. And they obviously went out this offseason, and they got Matt Moore and they got Chase Anderson. They spent real money to get these guys. They're not guys that they brought in as non-roster invitees. They gave them guaranteed money. They gave them, you know, major league contracts. And so Matt Moore, his first outing tonight in Philadelphia, had a good first inning, but then just kind of lost the plate and was pretty erratic. He reminded one of a left-handed Vince Velasquez in a lot of ways. And, you know, we're trying to get away from that towards the back end of the rotation. Did you get a chance to see any of Matt Moore's performance against the Mets here tonight?
Yeah, that's more or less the comparison that started circulating. At a certain point, his pitch count was high enough, and he'd allowed enough base runners for the Vince Velasquez comps to start pouring in. It was pretty gratifying to see him get through three innings, and I think it comes down to expectations, where you're just like, oh, what do you want from your number four starter? And it can't be nothing. But, you know, Matt Moore, as a number four starter, he's going to make a couple starts like this. So, you know, encouraging enough, but ultimately nothing that excited me. Obviously, you're going to let him make a few starts. Obviously, you're not going to be too dramatic in making changes and considering what options are even at your disposal. But yeah, you know, you would have liked to have seen better, but that's just mostly because the Mets scored. And to Moore's defense, ironically, the defense didn't really come through for him in a couple of key spots, I think. So yeah, you could definitely blame that Hazley play. It will certainly come up a lot, in which he backtracked several steps, then ran in the entire outfield, basically, and came up short on a fly ball. I'm sure we'll hear exactly what happened there. But plays like that aren't going to help your number four starter. I mean, the lower you get in the rotation, the less slip-ups are going to be permissible throughout the start. So I think we're just seeing that. We're in the back end of the Phillies' bullpen, and you know, you gotta stay on your game.
Yeah, we're going to talk about the center field situation in a few minutes, because I thought Matt Gelb had an interesting tweet that I wanted to mention during the course of the podcast as well. But what was your, Liz, what was your favorite part of the opening series against the Atlanta Braves? Was there a moment, a player, or a play that you particularly found enjoyable?
I think the opening day game was great, and I'll say that because I had a migraine on Saturday and slept entirely through the game. I waking up, you know, thankfully without a headache, which was nice, and discovering that I had missed Zach Wheeler being totally dominating was frustrating. And so I can't in good conscience say a game that I missed. If I had watched it, I'd probably say that. But the opening day game was wonderful. I mean, they won on a walk-off.
Yeah.
That was so, it was, I mean, it's so fun. And for the first time in a while, I felt like they really have a chance to do this. They could win this right now. I have confidence that they have enough hitters, you know, and they'll be able to string enough together and get it done. And they did.
They did. They get Gene Segura with the walk-off on opening day. Justin, did you have what was your favorite moment from the opening series against Atlanta?
Well, it's tough to argue against the opening day walk-off, but since Liz didn't pick Zach Wheeler's start, I'll say that because of how impressive it was. You know, I think Wheeler is a guy who's always been simmering near the top expectation-wise. I think, you know, the Mets weren't too sorry to see him go, or not sorry enough to keep him, at least. So to see him put together a start like that to begin his 2021 campaign, I mean, it was just impressive. Like, yeah. It's been a while since three Phillies starters went that deep into a game. And, I mean, he just improved on the performance Aaron Nola had on opening day. It was one hit and no earned runs with 10 strikeouts. I mean, that's some Cliff Lee stuff. You know, that's the kind of last era of dominant pitching numbers we used to see pretty much on the regular around here. So, man, all that talk about them having not a 1-2 but a 1A, 1B, you know, not for nothing, but this first series, they really that's come through.
Yeah, right. No, I think you're right. I think they have two aces. I think they absolutely do. And I guess the other question, and for me, my favorite moment was, of course, you guys know how much I love watching pitchers hit, and so Zach Wheeler getting his RBI single and RBI double totally legitimized my crusade against the designated hitter in the National League, and so I was pleased to see that. You know that. That Zach Wheeler was productive at the plate, and once again proves you don't need the DH in the National League. I've been saying this
definitively
for a very long time.
I'll zigzag again on this issue. I'll come back to the other side. Absolutely, I'm a total coward with my vote.
That's right. I guess, you know, one of the things I was thinking about after watching those two guys, and you go back to last year. If you look at the stats last year, Zach Wheeler and Aaron Nola's numbers were almost identical. They had almost exactly the same type of seasons. And when Nola pitched great on opening day, Zach Wheeler pitched just a little bit better in game number two. Based off of what we've seen since Zach Wheeler has arrived in Philadelphia, is he a little – I think he's a little better than Aaron Nola right now. And this is maybe one of those things that's going to infuriate some fans. It's just like, they're both awesome. Just shut up. But you know, this is part of the fun of baseball. And you know, right now, like if I was
getting people to tell us to shut up.
Yeah. I'm getting people to say, Stolness, shut up. I mean, it's part of what I do. I think right now, Zach Wheeler is probably the best starting pitcher on this team by a little bit over Aaron Nola. I think he's just a little bit more dominant than Nola. I think his stuff is a little bit better than Aaron Nola. And it's not just based off of yesterday, but if you go through all of last season, for much of last season, Zach Wheeler was just every bit as good as Aaron Nola. And I'm watching him throw 98 on the corners, and it was really something else what he did on Saturday. How do you guys see these top two? Are they even? Do you have Nola still as the true number one on this team? Is it impossible to differentiate between the two, Justin?
Not impossible. I guess I'd say that throughout their careers, maybe we have seen Zach Wheeler's ceiling, but Aaron Nola has yet to truly, you know, get up there and stay up there. I don't know. He had a hell of a season. When was that? 2018. He was an all-star, finished third in the Cy Young voting. And I mean, I think that's where expectations got locked in for him, as they should have been, because his stuff was untouchable that year. And then we've had two closer to average years since then, but you know, one of them was like a fourth of a year. And it wasn't like, you know, this was a particularly dominant era of Phillies baseball. We all know the turmoil that leadership has gone through, and the coaching and the management side, especially in regards to how pitchers are approaching, you know, their jobs. So I'm sure Nola wasn't immune to that. I mean, you can make up excuses, but yeah, I think it's an interesting argument, because I haven't heard it brought up yet. And it's tough not to put Nola in at number one, because that's what he's been built up to be. He came through the Philly system. But after this start to the season and looking at their numbers comparably through the past 2 years, I think it's a fair one to make.
Liz, what do you think?
I agree. I feel bad a little bit, because I think if Nola's great year was slightly less great, I wouldn't feel as bad, because I'm starting to think that the guy he is the guy we've seen the last couple of years, which isn't bad.
Yeah.
That's not bad. He's a solid pitcher, and he's exactly the type of guy you want in the top part of your rotation. But the way Zach Wheeler's been pitching, he's been on a different level.
Yeah.
You know, I think I still need to see more starts from both of them this season, just because, well, we sort of know what we're going to get from Wheeler at this point, at least we think we do. Mm-hmm. It's still heads or tails whether we get, you know, we're all still hoping to get some of 2018 Nola.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. I think there's some of that there.
Yeah, I'll hope for that forever, mm-hmm. which is what makes it really difficult. But, I mean, if Zach Wheeler keeps pitching like this, that contract is you know, as mm-hmm. big as people thought it was, is going to be a freaking steal. It'll yeah. be a bargain.
Yeah.
He looked completely dominant. I was talking with someone on Twitter about whether that was the most dominant anyone a pitcher's looked since Doc's postseason no-no.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, and I think there's really arguments. Yeah. I think there are arguments for a couple of Cliff Lee starts in 2011, which Justin and I will get to on continued success. But I think it's definitely the most dominant any pitcher's looked since Cole Hamels threw his no-hitter.
Yeah, I mean, that Vince Velasquez...
Which everyone forgets about. Everyone yeah. forgets that Cole threw a no-hitter.
It's because it happened in his last start. You know, he had 1 foot out the door already. It was kind of a bittersweet no-hitter, so we don't remember it all that fondly, I think, in a lot of ways, because, you know, it almost feels like he did it in another team's uniform, because he was already... We knew he was going to be leaving. But you're right. It was. That Cole Hamels start was super dominant. I think it was probably the most dominant start since the Vince Velasquez 16 strikeout start, which we forget how dominant that start was. But Zach Wheeler... Here's the other thing. With Aaron Nola, he was pitching a shutout into the seventh inning. I mean, he was absolutely dominating with his stuff yeah. and then gave up the two-run home run to Sandoval, missed badly on the 0-2 pitch, but... He is still, you know, we saw him in spring against the Yankees. When his stuff is on, he's just as unhittable as anybody else. So it's a great problem. It's a great conversation to have. And I guess we'll bring in Zach Eflin to the argument here because he pitched just as good as those guys on Sunday, and we're talking about him as a you know, some people were saying another ace type pitcher, another number one type pitcher. And you know, I think he certainly pitched that way on Sunday. Has he increased expectations for himself, Liz, based on what he did on Sunday? Like, should we be thinking that's the kind of Zach Eflin start we're going to get all year? And if we do get that, then what is he? Like, is he another ace type starter?
This is, like, as you said, this is a great problem to have. Mm-hmm. I want to expect that. I feel bad expecting all of that from
Yeah,
Zach
I do
Eflin
too. It's not
time.
Fair. It's not
no,
fair.
No, but yeah. that's exactly the type of start that he turns in when he's on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is why I've been such a big fan of him, because when he's good, he's great. And when he's bad, it's usually not absolutely, you know, heart-stoppingly awful. It's not great, but I think his sort of like the range of good and bad is better than people think it is.
Mm-hmm.
And
so a higher floor for him, basically.
I think so. Yeah. I'm sure I will be proven wrong. Someone no. take down this date and time. I will be proven wrong. He will give up, I'm sure, 20 runs in an inning at some point. I don't want to call him another ace-type pitcher because I don't think that's mm-hmm. fair. I think yeah. he still needs to prove that to us. But I think it's within – I think it's certainly within his, you know, his ability to be that mm-hmm. way. He's shown it. He's shown that a number of times since he was called up, that he can do this more often than not, which is yeah. what you look for in a number two starter at least.
Yeah. Yeah, no, for sure. And Justin, with Zach Eflin's start on Sunday, you know, this is kind of what everybody was hoping for with him, to give the Phillies three dominant starters. You know, were your expectations for him changed based off of what happened on Sunday, or are you still kind of in the same place with Zach Eflin? Because my expectations, my hopes, I guess, for him changed a little bit, because he really looked unbelievably good.
If we think of our expectations as like a large boulder that can only be moved a little bit at a time. Yeah, and then that
I don't think of my expectations that way, though. That's the problem. I've always.
Oh.
Yeah, that's the same.
Your expectations are a small panicked mouse
that's
darting
right.
back and forth
that's right.
between
that's
options.
That's exactly what they are. Yeah,
it's one of those two things.
They're a boulder right. or a mouse.
Yes.
That's right.
Did you guys not take this class in elementary school? It's the two things they can be. Anyway, I would say that I'm able to approach this with, I think, a little more rationale. I think that Eflin shouldn't be expected to turn in a start like that every time. I think Vince Velasquez can be a cautionary tale, if only just for your mental health. Same thing out with Moore tonight. You know, it's fun. I'm not saying you shouldn't enjoy things. Definitely don't. I was enjoying Matt Moore's start until a certain point this evening. And it was fun to think maybe the Phillies have like four pitchers who can get through a start. And again, you know, if you're not crediting a guy with a great start in game number one as being indicative of the rest of his season, I guess you can't do that with a guy who makes a bad start too. But in the case of Eflin, he definitely outdid my expectations. He was a lot better in his first start than I expected him to be, because, like I said, I still at this point don't expect this to be the norm for him. A couple more times and I'll start to trust him. Yeah, Liz and I talked about this a lot this winter, just trusting individual players, reaching that point where you can trust the entire team to go out there and get a win, to make a start, to get the hit you need. And we're starting to get there with the Phillies, I think. But in the case of you know, Wheeler and Nola, I'm feeling great. Eflin, I feel like I'm getting there, and this start, you know, move the boulder a little bit. But I'm not fully on the side of expecting him to be a guy who goes deep into games all the time, doesn't allow runs to come across, you know, limits the damage, doesn't walk a whole lot of people. Yeah, by the way, can I switch from bullpen to rotation for that first question you asked me? Because I just realized they only walked one guy between the three of them. And yeah, okay, I'm going with starting rotation. Yeah.
No, that was an incredible performance on Thursday and Saturday and Sunday by the Phil starters. But unfortunately, Matt Moore wasn't able to quite follow that up here as we're recording on Monday night. We're going to step away and take a quick break. We'll talk about the offense a little bit when we come back. And you know that center field job that was such a big talking point during spring training? Well, I think they're still trying to win that job because nobody is doing it right now. So we'll get into that coming up next here on Hittin' Season. And we're back on Hittin' Season. So the offense this weekend against the Atlanta Braves did enough. I think they got, and this is fine because during the course of a regular season, the Phillies are going to hit into a lot of hard outs. They're going to be swinging the bats well, and unfortunately, balls are going to be finding gloves. And this weekend, a lot of softly hit balls were finding green pasture in the outfield and were squeaking through the infield. Phillies bats really found a way to kind of to figure it out, and that's fine. You know, you're going to win some games like that, and you're going to lose some games when you're hitting the ball real hard and it's hitting right at people. But the bats have yet to really join the team since they came to Philadelphia. It's been a slow start for pretty much everybody up and down the lineup. Alec Boehm came through with a couple of clutch hits during the course of the weekend. By the way, I'm sure one of you two correctly predicted Andrew Knapp would be the first Philly to home run this year, right?
I don't know why I didn't, honestly, because it's exactly the type of thing he would do after mm-hmm. the year he had last year. When he hit that home run, I'm like, I'm an idiot for not thinking this would happen.
Like, I mean, I'm pretty sure
Nick Pivetta had a no-hitter going for like four innings today or something. Oh. That's in the same, I'm just saying, in the same vein, you know.
You want to know how many pitches he threw through five innings?
70.
92.
Oh, 90.
Yeah,
Nick.
You don't finish a no-hitter with that.
No, I don't think you do. I think when Andrew Knapp hit that bomb, and it was a bomb, we all were thinking the same thing. Why did they sign JT? I mean, we were saying it all winter long. You don't need to sign JT Realmuto. You have
don't
Andrew
sleep
Knapp
on
here.
Knapp was what
That's
I was
right.
yelling.
That was.
From the Ben Franklin Bridge at passing tugboats.
That's exactly what you – I know. You were on that train. Or the tugboat. But yeah, the offense, and I don't think anybody's concerned about the offense because the offense is going to hit. We have assumed that this was going to be a pretty a pretty good strength of this team this year. They've hit well down in spring training, and they just, you know, early in the season here, you're facing the best starters during the first few games. The Phillies are facing two very good teams in the Atlanta Braves and New York Mets, all that have very good starters. So, but looking at center field, the center field position especially has been pretty awful so far, Liz. Roman Quinn continues to swing through a ton of baseballs. Adam Haseley, like Justin mentioned in the previous segment, misplayed a fly ball in center field, and he also has not produced at the plate. Again, we're just a handful of games into the season, so it's too soon to make a real strong indictment of anybody here. But so far, center field being a weakness that we kind of suspected coming into the season. I mean, these guys are hitting in the eight hole. They're just expected to play competent defense, and so far it's been a little dicey.
It's been no fun. It hasn't been great. I feel like we all get excited about, once a year, we get excited about Roman Quinn.
Mm-hmm.
And yet we never really learn that what we see now is really who he is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, remember how Michael Franco was the home run champion of spring training?
I do, and how year much after that, year.
Yes, and how much that does not matter.
Right.
At all in the major, in the once you get to the real games. I feel like it's the same thing with Roman Quinn. I don't think there's a player I've had more hopes for that I've been more frustrated by repeatedly over and over.
Mm-hmm.
And it's my own fault mostly for being like, yeah, this is the year he finally, you know, he's finally going to figure it out and stop doing all that and figure out a way to get on base more often. And yet. I don't know what they do about center field. Do you? Do you have any idea what they're going to do about it?
She's asking you, Justin. Not me.
I'm asking anybody.
Yeah, asking you, Justin.
I have an idea of what they're going to do, and I think it's exactly what no one wants them to do. But you know, you watch Adam Haseley stare blankly into the night sky for, you know, one time, and you start thinking, all right, who else we got? Who else is around? I mean, it's not like Girardi has shown a special interest in Adam Haseley's case over the past, you know, 2 years. So it's not like he's going to hang on to him for sentimental value if the time comes. Yeah, I don't know. It's not like the Phillies need an all-star center fielder, but they do need a center fielder. They need somebody who can be there when the fly balls are dropping and hold mm-hmm. their gloves out. And when you can't even do that, I know, I saw this play happen live, so I'm really holding it against Haseley, and it's probably a big reason why the Phillies are losing as we record this. So that's a little fresh in my head. Mm-hmm. But it's exactly the kind of thing that you're hoping, okay, this is, if we set the bar at don't do this, then we can find a center fielder and he can bat eighth and he can hit 230 and fine, whatever. It doesn't matter. As long as, you know, we know that everything hit to center field isn't a base hit. So, you know, I'm not saying that's the only thing Haseley does out there, especially since I've been talking up how well he plays center field at Citizens Bank Park, where the Phillies are playing right now, yeah, all winter long. But, you know, if you set that as the expectation and any of these guys can't meet it, as Haseley didn't once tonight, yeah, they're not going to be around for much longer because this team doesn't have time to wait around while a center fielder learns how to play center field.
Well, and some of the other guys have to play well to take a little bit of the pressure off the center fielder also. I mean, they got to make the plays, and they got to make the plays defensively. If this offense is hitting, you don't need the eight-hole guy to hit 280, although it's a really wonderful thing if it happens. But Adam Haseley and Roman Quinn need to play really good defense in order to prove their worth, in order to stick around at the big league level. They've got to be able to play competent defense and maybe even make the spectacular play. Roman Quinn certainly has the speed and athleticism to be an elite center fielder, but we said the same thing about Ben Revere year after year, and Revere would make the nice play occasionally here and there, but was never an elite center fielder. And the Phillies have really been searching for that really good center fielder since Shane Victorino left. They have not been able to find anybody to consistently play that spot in quite a while, and the search continues. And I thought that's why maybe there was a chance they would go out and get Jackie Bradley Jr. this offseason. That didn't happen because I agree with that. I think it was a fine idea to let Adam Haseley and Roman Quinn get a shot at this job, and it's still way too early to pull the plug on either one of those guys. And again, if Bryce Harper gets going, if Rhys Hoskins gets going, if, you know, Andrew McCutchen gets going, some of these other guys in the lineup, if they can start hitting the ball, then it's not going to be as noticeable when Roman Quinn strikes out three times or when Adam Haseley, you know, goes on an 0-for-10 run, you know. But when the rest of the offense isn't performing, it everybody's struggles look a lot worse, especially when you compound them with defensive struggles. And so here tonight, as we're recording, the Phillies are facing the offense. You can't blame the Phillies offense for what's happening. They've gotten three hits through six innings against Jacob deGrom, who's throwing 100 miles an hour. I mean, he was
throwing 100 miles.
Yeah,
an
he
hour.
Came out of the game, right?
Yes, he did, for yeah. some reason.
I don't know what is their manager's Luis Rojas. What is his problem?
It didn't look like
cares?
An injury, because people were congratulating him in the dugout. I mean, he didn't go to the locker room. He was, you know, he had the jacket on his pitching arm, and, you know, people were congratulating him, patting him on the chest. It looks like maybe they're just trying to watch his pitch count here early in the season. I gotta say, you know, I guess these games, you know, matter less than the ones later. But, you know, you've got Jacob deGrom out here absolutely destroying people.
Yeah, I'm amazed he didn't take a bat to someone's head, if he is in fact coming out of the game. Mm-hmm. Because I had like first pick in our staff Cy Young snake draft this year, and I picked Jacob deGrom because who else do you pick?
Yeah.
He's the best pitcher on earth, and all I had to do is spend 5 seconds looking at, you know, his stats to realize, wow, his fastball velocity has actually increased every single year since he got to the majors.
Yeah, how is that possible?
I don't know.
Yeah. You know,
I don't know. He's so good.
He's so good.
I hate it.
You could make the argument that Jacob deGrom is the Mike Trout of the National League.
Oh,
yeah,
right.
That's a great thing to say.
Just the easy Cy Young candidate every year. Projections through the roof. Just
his
an unfair
team is useless.
Wins above replacement. Team has never given him the playoff opportunities he's deserved, that talent deserves. Generations have melted around him. Remember that rotation was supposed to be, and I say this as they're beating the Phillies, but you know what I mean. That rotation was supposed to be with all those guys, with DeGrom. DeGrom was, Matt Harvey was probably considered higher than Matt, or than
oh, absolutely
than Jacob
DeGrom he was. Absolutely
for a while.
He was.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then DeGrom's still here. He's outlasted all of them. He's worth like 8 to 10 wins all by himself every season. I mean, yeah, I that just clicked in my head, and I was like, yeah, that's him, all right. And we play in his division.
Dude, that's your next baseball prospectus piece, by the way.
Yeah.
Jacob deGrom is the National
Copyright
League's
Mike
TM,
Trout. Justin Clue.
We're recording this, right?
Yeah, you better write that, or else I'm going to steal it from you. That's brilliant. No, because that is such a good analysis, because he is totally the Mike Trout of the National League for all the reasons that you mentioned. And you watch him pitch, and he's just on another level. He's just on another level from everybody else.
I read something recently about the Mets not, I'm looking up his contract status right now, because I read something about the Mets not jumping on an extension. He's, let me see. Ah, he can opt out after the 2022 season, and then he's signed through 2024. I think there was discussion about an extension beyond that, because duh. And the Mets I think what I read was that the Mets were hedging, or they weren't ready. And I'm like, yeah, I know that you just spent $300 million on Francisco Lindor, but this guy could get into the Hall of Fame right now. He's so good, and he's only getting better. Mm. And your team is probably not going to win anything, so at least sign him and give your fans a reason to come to the ballpark.
Yeah. Hey, by the way, as we're watching this game, the Phillies bullpen, after having to take over in the fourth inning as they're moving into the bottom of the sixth, Sam Coonrod coming out with two scoreless innings, looking really good. Also, throwing 98 miles an hour past people. He looked really good in the spring as well. So Sam Coonrod has gotten this game to, at the very least, the seventh inning with not having allowed any more runs. And so that was his first appearance of the season. And it just, you know, the Phillies bullpen is continuing to pitch well here in game number four. And, you know, getting down and having your starting pitcher leave the game early, Oh man, JT Realmuto just missed one.
Yeah,
just missed one to dead
swinging
center.
Swinging at the first pitch, man.
He got his pitch though. He just missed it.
Pitchers have really been struggling with the double rosin bag thing tonight. I don't know if you noticed that. Sam Coonrad struggled with it. Matt Moore struggled with it. So that's really throwing the boys off out there. But yeah, you're right. It was a pretty searing relief appearance from Coonrad.
Yeah. Very good. And I think that's going to be, this game will be an even bigger indicator of kind of where we are with the bullpen, because they're going to have to cover so many more innings, and we'll get a better idea of who Joe Girardi is going to use kind of in these middle innings and in the later innings when the team is behind, as opposed to trying to lock up the save. Hector Neris, is, I would imagine, is unavailable because he's pitched, you know, he's pitched in every game, and he's pitched two days in a row. I doubt they'd push him to a third day in a row. I doubt they'd push Archie Bradley for a third game in 4 days to start off the season. So you might get a little, maybe you will get a little David Hale action, although I would have thought if they were going to bring Hale in, it would have been earlier. Maybe we see Velasquez. I'll be curious as they go with Connor Brogdon. But regardless, Sam Coonrod, two really good innings from him. And this will, I think, give us a little bit better of a feeling as far as, you know, who's going to do what in the bullpen, especially when they're losing in a game like this. And Alec Bohm with another base hit. Bohm's hitting. Bohm is the one guy who's hitting on this team right now.
Yeah, I was just going to say the offense needs to show up. The pitching has been there. Now the offense needs to do their part. And as I was about to say that, Alec Bohm got on base. So at least he's doing, at least he's out there being productive. Hey, that was just out of the glove, too.
The Mets bring in a reliever. The first thing the Phillies do is almost knock the ball out of the park and then get the next guy on base. I mean, it's not all bad. The lineup is still very capable.
Yeah. And you know, I wonder, too, you know, they talked about the fact that they might deaden the baseballs this year. And I think I saw something that, based on some of the numbers in spring training, the number that there's been a significant decrease in distance traveled for balls with an exit velocity of 100 miles an hour between, with a launch angle like 23 and 30 degrees, which are typically the types of launch angles and the types of velocity that result in home runs. JT Realmuto looked like he got all of that baseball that died in center field. And so when the summer months roll around, it's going to be more humid. The ball is going to fly a little bit further. But I swear I thought that ball was off. It was out of the ballpark off his bat. And you just wonder, you know, are players going to have to, are they going to have to adjust? Are they going to have to kind of do more like what Alec Bohm typically does, which is lace line drives all over the field as opposed to trying to elevate the baseball. And I don't think Realmuto is not one of those lift guys, but you know, it's so far this season, the Phillies have one home run, and the power just hasn't been there yet.
What's funny is I thought you meant, will these guys have to adjust? I just assumed you meant, will they have to swing even harder? And I thought, you better not recommend that to Bryce Harper, because it will rip his torso off the top or the bottom of his body, and he will just be flopping around in there, and he'll look ridiculous.
You know, Stephen Goldman wrote a really interesting piece on Baseball Prospectus. It's published today about the pace of play issue, and he mentioned a bunch of things that MLB could do that, you know, to increase like action in the game that doesn't involve screwing with the ball or banning the shift. And if they wanted to reduce home runs and increase action, like deadening the ball is the worst thing they could have done. Because it slows it down as it gets to a fielder. And so there's no more action. It's just more dudes catching fly balls in the outfield. Like, the best thing to do would be, why don't everybody move the fences back? Because that just increases the amount of ground they have to cover, which is different than deadening the ball. Like, I think what this, if deadening the ball does, in fact, have a negative impact on home runs, it's not going to make anything more interesting. And MLB is just going to be scratching its head like, gee, I wonder why. Because they're full of idiots who don't test anything.
I guess that's true. I didn't think about that. I remember back in the 80s when you had ballparks like Busch Stadium and the Astrodome, those fences were really far back. And I know Coors Field had deep alleys, but the ball carried so well there, the ball still flew out. And then you still had tons of home runs. But they're also, You know, one of the reasons Rockies hitters always had such high batting averages is because there's so many places in that huge monstrous outfield to for the ball to land. And that, you know, if you did that, you would be able to see probably more balls fall in the gap, get more singles, more bleeding hits here and there, get more runners on base, and that makes a lot of sense to me. I think that's a great idea.
Yeah, I take no credit. That's all Stephen Goldman. But I was, you know, you mentioning the ball made me think of that. Like, why not move the fences out? Because then there's, then you wouldn't have to bother banning the shift because there's just more ground for guys to cover. The shift will not matter.
Right. All right. Well, we obviously are in the middle of watching this Phillies-Mets game. The Phillies are still down 2-0 as they're going into the seventh inning. And I think at this point, it's time for us to wrap up this this fine little podcast and so we can divert our attention to this game fully. But any final thoughts from you as we wrap things up here on episode 463?
Well, as you were hoping, I've looked up the statistics of when Mike Trout has faced Jacob deGrom throughout his career.
I was hoping for this.
It was one season in 2017. He had two at-bats against deGrom. Well, three plate appearances and two at-bats. And I think it tilts more towards Trout. More towards Trout. He's 1-for-2, but it was only a single, and he worked a walk. But deGrom did strike him out once. So it's pretty...
It's pretty even.
Pretty even, yeah. Feels pretty, So at least now we know what happens when two Mike Trouts face off against each other.
I think your theory is confirmed that they are maybe even the same person.
We've nullified each other.
Yeah. It's like a complicated math equation where you're canceling out different sides of the equation, right? That's
constantly.
It's what I saw in Good Will Hunting, anyway. Liz, any final thoughts from you?
Dear listener, you already know the outcome of this game.
That's right, because by the time you hear this, it will be over.
I don't know if I'm jealous of you or not.
I don't know. It feels like the team has a late inning rally against the Mets bullpen in them, doesn't it?
I hope so. It's the Mets, and I guess that's the only evidence we need.
You know what I realized tonight? They think of us kind of the same way at this point.
I know. More evidence for why. We are the same, and our fan bases are the same, which I know you don't like hearing about, Justin, but it is true.
I don't. I hate it. I know it's true. It makes total sense.
Why you hate it.
Hate it.
But that's why he hates it. Yeah, the truth. Yeah. It's easy to hate the truth sometimes, no doubt about it.
One more last thought. I know Buster Olney, it hasn't been officially announced yet, but Buster Olney reported that the All-Star Game is going to be held at Coors Field now. And for anyone saying that's boring, they could shut up because even with a deadened ball, the Home Run Derby is going to be tremendous.
Man. That
it's
is going to be fun.
It's also a gorgeous ballpark.
It is, yeah. And Justin, I know you love Coors Field. You've been there a number of
love
times.
Love it.
Yeah.
Yes, it's fabulous. So, excellent, wonderful, perfect choice. Atlanta sucks.
By the way, Connor Brogdon out here in the top of the eighth inning pumping 98 miles an hour past people. This is some fun. Even in a losing effort, this is fun watching these guys throw some heat. So,
John, I'm imagining you sitting on your couch at home with a radar gun pointed at the TV when these guys come out. I love your enthusiasm.
How else are you going to get the miles an hour?
That's exactly right.
It's not like they put it on TV. I mean, you have to do this yourself at home.
What kind of technology do you think is available? Yeah, you just see one pitch, record it, take it back and forth, you know, the whole rest of the game, just calculating the speed at which it was traveling, and then you report on that. Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, if somebody else has a better way of doing it, let me know. My DMs are open. But anyway. All right, folks, listen, that's going to do it for episode number 463 of Hittin' Season. My thanks to Justin and Liz for joining me on the show once again. And, guys, we have got a ton of stuff coming your way here at the Good Fight Podcast feed. New episodes of Continued Success in the Dirty Inning and Hittin' Season, and we'll have the occasional up and in for you here and there. And, of course, go on over to the Patreon and become a Patreon member of Hittin' Season. It's at patreon.com/hittin'season. We have our first sign-up on the Utley tier of the Hittin' Season Patreon, which is pretty insane, and we're very excited about it. And we're gonna really work with anybody who signs up on that tier to make the Hittin' Season experience a special one for you. So head on over to patreon.com/hittin'season and check that out and see if that might be worth your while. In the meantime, you can sign up on the $5 a month tier, where you're gonna get absolutely hammered and a bunch of other cool stuff that we're doing. So Anybody. Anyway, thanks for tuning in. We'll talk to you next time here on Hitting Season.